Argument now in the case of Ingram against Merrill Lynch. A lot of people streaming to the Merrill Lynch side of the room. Where's Mr. Plotkin?
He's checking with his broker.
Pardon?
He's checking with his broker.
I suppose his motion was 5 years late. Mr. Plotkin may have a timeliness problem. On his way. Having trouble with the door, perhaps? Plotkin, we expect lawyers to be here when their cases are called.
I was in the attorney's room, sir.
Yes. Here is where the case is argued.
First, may I ask a personal favor? I would like to be able to keep a lifesaver in my mouth while I talk because due to a drug that I take, my mouth dries up. And I once, about 100 years ago, witnessed a lawyer being virtually eviscerated by an appellate judge.
We try to do that only on the basis of merit.
I may be in trouble then. Wanted to ask the court to keep separate in your mind the question of wrongdoing and the question of remedy if there has been wrongdoing. The reason I say that is that some of the opposing briefs that have been filed dwell on the relief and attribute to that relief the possibility of all kinds of terrible things happening, including the prevention of the second coming. So I would like really to concentrate on wrongdoing. And
but
there's one issue,
not
I
the
think
ground on which this request was decided. You need to concentrate on the ground on which the district court resolved the issue, which was that this motion was many years too late.
Well, that was the next thing I was going to say. I'm aware that judges have great distaste for something like this. Somebody
well,
coming in
rule,
years later.
Rule 60 sets a one-year limit. This was an excessive limit, and therefore it is untimely. What else is there to say?
Well, I think there's a great deal to say. Was that intended to cover a situation where clients have been betrayed by their lawyers? If the answer to that is yes, that there is no remedy in a class action,
clients who are injured by their lawyers have a remedy called malpractice.
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor.
You don't believe there is any such remedy?
No, and I don't think it's adequate here. What we're talking about is a class action. But as long as I'm here, let me just present the facts. Okay, they're very brief. They're very brief. They both take 5 minutes. Okay.
Well, that's basically the remainder of your time, and that will leave you no time to address the ground on which this case was decided. You can
shorten
the time as you wish, I suppose. But
well, I've addressed that the time factor in the briefs, I don't know that I have much to add to that, but I would like to bring the facts out so that the court can hear them. And here then is expressed by an advocate for the people who I think have been victimized by their lawyers. There is a settlement of a class action, a gender discrimination class action. And under the settlement, the class members don't get any money, but what they do is they substitute a new mediation arbitration process for the one that's set up by NASD and so forth. That's what it does. It does add this other factor, and that is that Merrill Lynch will pay the attorney's fees for the class members who prevail. Now, the next few facts that I am going to mention are the key to it. And if the court has no interest in those facts, then I'm done. And I will not be surprised, but I'll be disappointed. I knew from the outset that this was an extremely difficult case. I've been practicing for almost 50 years, and I haven't gotten any smarter, but I've learned that much. This was not a settlement, as they say, where you have a formula which determines what the class members will get. Rather, the fiduciaries, the class counsel, and here we're talking about Stoll and Friedman because the other firm isn't even in the picture. Stoll and Friedman goes out and signs up virtually all of the 925 or so persons in the class to 25% contracts, recovery contracts, media contingency contracts. And there are two distinctive provisions of that retainer agreement. One is it only covers mediation. It says nothing about arbitration. It says we get 25% of any recovery we get from you through mediation. The court itself can speculate on whether or not that's the reason that when I came into the case 4.5 years later, there hadn't been a single arbitration. Now, how can that be? How can you have about 900 settlements by mediation and not a single arbitration? Is it because the contracts, the retainer contracts, provide only for mediation? But then it has an even more important provision. This is really the most distinctive provision because of the import that it has for everything, including timeliness and so forth. It says, these contingency agreements say that they will not become operative. That is, the lawyers will get nothing if the class member settles in the first stage. The first stage is that Merrill Lynch makes offers. And if one of these women accepts that offer, the lawyers get nothing. Well, who would have guessed it? Merrill Lynch made not one offer. Not one offer. So they pushed all of these women into the hands of Stoll and Friedman. That's unnatural. It's as unnatural as if I jump out the window here, I'm going to go up rather than down. It just doesn't happen. So what is the significance? I don't have to paint that out. Why did Merrill Lynch voluntarily do something that was going to cost it more money? Because now it was also going to have to pay any attorney's fees, which meant at least 25% of every recovery. And a lot of these people were going to get much larger recoveries. This was not a situation where proving liability, discrimination, was going to be a big deal. It was almost assured that most of these women were going to recover, and what was it not known was how much. So why would Merrill Lynch do that? My own view is that Merrill Lynch would not pay $1 to lawyers suing it for any reason other than it got $5 in value in return. That's what this is all about. Now, I have to say, I'm a plaintiff's lawyer. I do some class actions, not many anymore. And I am in favor of big fees. I don't like the idea of even... one of the reasons I almost didn't get involved here is that I didn't want anybody to be able to quote me when I come in and ask for a large fee. It was the truth. Okay. I've seen the light. And I want to continue. If I use up my 10 minutes, I use up my 10 minutes. I just like to get my point out. And then if the court says, we don't care, that's all right. But I will tell you that this happens in class actions all the time. Class members are sold down the river all the time. These lawyers, they would never disclose. How can they not disclose how much they recovered? They're fiduciaries. So I made an estimate, I think it was like between 25 and 60 million, maybe more.
Thank you, Mr. Plotkin.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Mr. Dichter, I do not think it is necessary for you to say very much since Mr. Plotkin chose not to address the only issue before us.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court and counsel. And by the way, your opening remark, those are not all attorneys for Merrill Lynch. There are two other parties here in the proceeding. Mr. Plotkin, in this case, represents 11 of the approximately 900 claimants. Seven
it
of those.
It is unnecessary for you to recite the facts.
Yes.
Is there any argument that you heard that you think you need to respond to since Mr. Plotkin chose not to argue the only issue before us?
Only if the court is concerned about why we did not make offers in the first stage, I'm prepared to address that.
Doesn't sound like it.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Davis? It does not look like we have any. Mr. Eldredge? Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.